The guru is not just a teacher. The guru is one that is appointed by God to lead that devotee to God realization. That means he is not only teaching, he is not only giving inspiration, he takes on the actual responsibility for that devotee to lead him, to take on to a great extent the burden of karma, and to gradually open doors one after another according to the readiness of the disciple, and finally opens the last door to the last stage of God communion, God realization. And that means that a true guru has to have, in order to be able to fulfill to fullest capacity that divine task, he has to have unbroken oneness with God. He has to have certain qualities, such as omniscience. He has to know the past of his disciple, past incarnations, in order to know what karmic conditions are coming up in order to help and to minimize the blow or doing away with it completely. He has to have omnipotence to be able to do that. And above all, he has to be omnipresent, because sometimes it happens that the disciple and the guru are not physically on the same plane. The guru is omnipresent, as God is omnipresent, in order to be with that disciple anytime, all the time. Now, I want to go into the last stages of evolution. And you see from there, the master talks in the lessons about different degrees of masters. He said, Jivanmukta, this is a Sanskrit word. Jiva means the soul. Mukta means free. He says, Jivanmukta, in a strict sense, applies to a yogi who, by refraining from new desires, has destroyed the very root cause of reincarnation. A Jivanmukta, however, may be required to return to earth if all seeds of his past actions have not been totally roasted by the fires of wisdom or realization. Some Jivanmuktas destroy all past material karma after death by certain work in the astral cosmos. Completing their lessons in the astral spheres, they do not have to return to this earth. In other words, if a person is free from earthly desires, even though he has still some karmic debts to pay, so to speak, he is not required to come back to this earth. He can work it out in the astral. Other Jivanmuktas are able, on this earth, to materialize past karmic actions in visions and thus exhaust their reincarnation-making power. The next stage, a paramukta, or siddha. That is a soul that is free, has freed himself completely from the physical and the astral and the causal karma, and is a free soul. And then when a siddha, after leaving the body, completely free from all three planes, when such a one returns, and this happens very rarely, usually they don't come back, you know. If such a one comes back, then he is a divine incarnation, an avatar, supernal blessing to the world. Now, I remember when I came in the later years of Master's life, there was a discussion among the monks, is our guru an avatar or is he not? Then he went out to the desert to finish his writings, and he called me out there too. And that thought came again, is he an avatar or is he not? And then I remember reading in the autobiography when he said an avatar's body is not under the compulsion of duality. An avatar's body does not cast a shadow. I said, well, that's very simple. All I have to do is look and see whether his body casts a shadow. Master, of course, worked inside in dictating his interpretations of the Gita at that time, and I was doing construction work outside. The master came out about two or three times a day and talked with us. The monks had a little cottage about 4 miles away from master's place. And so that one morning as we were driving, I thought, now today I'm going to look. And so I worked there all day long. The master came out two or three times and talked with us and so on. And when I sat in the evening in a car to go back to our cottage, I thought, I forgot. I thought, tomorrow. Next morning, as I sat in a car, I said, no, today I'm going to look. Same thing happened. I forgot, even though I had seen him, he had to come out and talk with us and so on. And so it went on day after day after day. First I thought, you know, it's just an accident. But when it went on day after day after day, I thought, no, there's something fishy, you know. He has something to do with it. And then I thought, all right, I sit down and I think it over. And I did, and I thought, all right. He himself said he could fill the largest halls and he could draw hundreds of thousands of people through miracles and so on. He said he was not interested in that. No phenomena. He said, I am interested in those that are sincerely coming with the one desire, to love God and to find God. And then I thought, even though he is an avatar, because he is not interested in phenomena, he would cast a shadow, even though he is an avatar. So I was perfectly satisfied. Then the next day, the master came out and we were talking and I saw a shadow. And I followed that shadow and up the master's body and into his eyes. And his eyes were dancing with laughter. And then with his cane, playfully, he hit me a little bit on my leg. Didn't say a word. I didn't say a word because I was perfectly satisfied. And then later, when I was back in Mount Washington, one of the monks asked the master a straight question. He said, sir, are you an avatar? You know, as if, what is an avatar? How can we understand with our little human intellect what an avatar is? But he asked the question. And master's answer was, yes. A teaching of this importance could not have been brought by a lesser one. The master came with a world mission. He came to bring again to the West Kriya Yoga, which had been forgotten during the Dark Ages, just carried through by a few. And Larimasha forbade his disciples to start an organization, to spread the teachings of Kriya Yoga, because he knew that that job was assigned to Paramahansa Yogananda. Not only to spread the teachings of Kriya Yoga, but to keep the teachings pure. Now, you have this in the lessons when the master said, implicit in the techniques and teachings of SRF are the help and blessings of the SRF gurus. That means that a guru, true guru, as I said before, is not just teaching or just giving inspiration. He takes on, to a great extent, the karmic burden of a disciple. Now, what is this teaching? We are too close yet to the beginning. We do not see the greatness yet and the influence in the world because it's just beginning. I remember the Master one time saying, millions will find God through these teachings. And when one of the monks looked at him questioningly as if he's, you know, he must have exaggerated at this time, the Master's answer was very emphatically, and I do not mean thousands, I mean millions. I didn't finish the first story about that shadow. Because in the next edition of the autobiography, the edition of 1951, Master gave me a copy of it, and he wrote something in it. And when I looked up that passage about the shadow, I saw he had changed it. It didn't say anymore, the avatar's body does not cast the shadow. It says now, since then, an avatar's body, on occasion, does not change.